Okay. On a completely different note, you were born in Tobago, right?
I was born in Tobago.
So yes. How old were you when you left?
I was 10.
How do you think that upbringing really influenced, you know, your musical trajectory and your science?
Okay, so I don't know if you know anything about West Indian parents, but West Indian parents are very focused on education.
Mm-hmm.
So I grew up in a West Indian household, and that was the number one thing.
Mm-hmm.
We all had to do something that was challenging.
Yes.
I probably internalized that differently. I thought that meant you had to go and do something hard. So I've always been looking for something deep.
Mm-hmm.
It was just the way I was wired, you know.
Right.
You know, my siblings all went into more traditional careers, but, you know, it's not as if they're, you know, they didn't go into physics. Okay. So,
yes.
You know, they picked the standard careers that people have, medicine and law, you know, and whereas that didn't really interest me. So with that as the foundation, and my parents maintained a West Indian household as I was growing up. So yeah, that was definitely the major driving force and inquiry, you know,
mm-hmm.
asking questions, you know, so.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's also just such a big part of, you know, science and,
yeah. Musically. Mm-hmm. My father played the clarinet. My sisters played the violin. I didn't have a whole lot of musical talent, I would have to say, that was clear in those days. We couldn't afford a piano, so I did music theory.
Wow.
As a
yeah.
kid.
Uh-huh.
Which was just fractions, so I liked it.
Yeah, there's so much math involved in that. You know, there's common denominators.
It's not math. It's arithmetic.
Yes.
Let's not elevate it. It's arithmetic. And so to me, it was just, this is just, you know.
Yeah.
With some fractions. Okay, I'll do this for a while. No problem, folks.
Yeah.
You think this is hard? No, this is not hard. It's just adding some fractions that have different denominators. How hard is that? So that was my first experience with music in Boston. We moved to Boston when I was 10.
Okay.
And it was interesting. I was taking piano lessons, but we didn't have a piano.
Mm-hmm.
So wow. I never practiced.
Okay.
So it was all theory. And as a result, the teacher just gave me some music books and I would just go and do, you know, it was fraction exercises, okay?
Yeah, no, I would say that's pretty talented. I would say that's pretty good, you know?
That's just having a math background, okay? Let's not elevate it.
Wow, okay. So, you know, music theory, piano lessons. How have your experiences with music changed as you've grown?
Okay, so then when we moved out of Boston, we actually did, I think my parents did get a piano. Yes, that's right.
Okay.
And we weren't, you know, I came from an educated family, but they didn't have a lot of means. My father was a professor.
Mm-hmm.
There were five kids. My mother didn't work. And so, you know, I think being in an academic town, you know, you could easily find a piano. Okay, so then I started taking piano lessons.
Mm-hmm.
And, but once again, I found I liked more the theory behind it than actually playing the piano.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah, I never really did. It was clear the piano was not my thing. Okay, but my younger sister and brother played the piano, and she was a piano performance major in college.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there was music all around, you know, and my parents always listened to very good classical music. You know, they would tell us this recording is the best recording of the Brandenburg concertos, you know, and you know, you're a kid and you go, okay, fine, whatever. so the piano was, it was clear that was not my thing. So I dropped that. And then when I was in college, I picked up the guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And, And I had several friends who played classical guitar, and that really intrigued me because the sounds were just incredible.
Yeah.
So, and there was a guitar teacher that you could take classes from at the college I attended. So I started studying classical guitar, and that was my instrument for, through college. I found it as it was a way of relieving stress. Mm. So music to me has always been a stress reliever.
Yeah.
And so I played the guitar for, through being 50 or so. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was my instrument.
Wow. It's funny that you mentioned that because I definitely think it's a great way to get escape from, homework or school or whatever that's going on.
Music is nonverbal.
Yes, that's right.
For me, it's not.
That's true. We are different. And
yeah, for you, it's nonverbal. You can just kind of like, but yeah, I have to make the language come alive. And so once again, it's telling a story.
Mm-hmm.
So, right. But we haven't gotten to that part yet. Okay.
Yeah. So, you mentioned listening to classical music as a child. What was your favorite piece of music to listen to?
Okay. The Brandenburg Concertos.
Okay.
The Nonsuch recording. I even remember the label because, it was just beaten into my head. That and then I remember Jean-Pierre Rampal had a series of recordings on the flute.
Okay.
And those were pretty, but definitely the Brandenburg Concertos.
Mm-hmm.
That was pretty formative.
Okay. I actually have never listened to that yet, but.
You've never listened to Brandenburg? Well, you should.
I never have, but that will be my next thing to listen to.
This is the thing about music, there's always more music to listen to.
Yes, that's so true. Especially because, there's such a long history behind it, and there are so many different types of music that I feel like everyone can find, one form of music that really intrigues them. And, you sing the opera.
Right.
And that's funny because a lot of people, when they think of physicists, they don't think about opera. They don't really think about music in general. And so how did that really come about?
Well, those who know me well know that I would tell them the only other thing I really wanted to be was an opera singer. It was physics or opera. And I actually developed a taste for opera when I was in grad school. I was in grad school at U of Washington, and Seattle is a great opera town. There's a Seattle Opera, an extremely good director. And I had friends who went to the opera. I didn't know a lot about it. I just started going to it. And it was like, wow, this is something I really want to be a part of.
Wow.
So I went to the opera because opera to me combines a symphony. It combines acting. The stage settings are just out of this world.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are elephants. I saw Aida with Linton Price in San Francisco. There are elephants on stage.
Yes.
Like, think of just something extravagant, then add something else to it. That's opera. The stories are just gut-wrenching. Look at the story of Don Carlo. And then the voices just soar. So with me, it was like, what is there not to like about opera?
Mm-hmm.
So it was really going to it that made me completely fall in love with opera. And I never thought I could sing it.
Yeah.
It was just going to operas, any opportunity, I would be at the opera.
Wow. Okay. So you had no previous experience with singing in general? Or
No, and this is what's really shocking is that I had never sung until 7 years ago.
Wow.
I mean,
That
my
is
mother says,
incredible.
well, I used to try to sing when I was vacuuming, doing my chores, but and it was very bad. No, I did not have any experience. I just knew I loved opera.
Wow. So with no previous experience,
How did I do
like,
this?
yeah. How, like,
Okay.
how,
That I don't shy away from a challenge. So, and prior experience is not something I necessarily view as a must before I go and try something. So I decided I would take voice lessons. And so I auditioned to sing with Cynthia Hayman Coleman, who was, she had a big career in opera. You can look her up. And she taught at the U of Illinois. And sent her an email, no response. And then I finally saw her doing a rehearsal for an opera. And I was just blown away by all of these kids who could sing. So I asked her if I could audition for her. And I had nothing to audition with. I didn't even have the right voice type of aria. I auditioned with a tenor aria, the Dallas Sioux Apache, just for a high tenor role. But I could read music, so I just sort of like stumbled through it. Then she said, well, why don't we start over? And that was it. That was March of 2015.
You know, as you talked about, there are so many different areas in opera. You know, there is theater, there's singing, there are just so many different parts to it. Did you have to take any other classes for that? Did you have to take acting classes? Or was it mainly just singing for you?
Okay, so when I was in college, these things you do that you just never think about end up being important in the end. So I'm always open to new experiences. And I was walking, on campus one day, and this friend of mine stopped me and said, "Hey, we need some people for this play." And I said, "Well, I couldn't get rid of him." So I finally said, "Okay, what's the play?" And it was a play to play. It was the part, it was called The Serpent. And the part they couldn't cast was the devil. So that piqued my interest, the devil. An interesting role, a devious individual. So I actually had acting experience, and the acting teacher in college was very, very good, and I paid attention to her. So I had some acting experience, that was it. A couple of plays, okay? But the main thing in opera is just having the voice. And I was being taught by one of the best, Cynthia Coleman. And you know this, the teacher makes all the difference. And especially when it comes to voice. I mean, everyone at the U of Illinois wanted to work with her. So I was an outlier. The best people in her studio were being picked up by the San Francisco Opera. One of them at the time, Alex Novakowski. Yeah, I mean, she just debuted at the Met. And then there was me. So studio classes with her were incredibly intimidating. So I would wait until the end to sing.
Well, so for me, when I play the piano, I feel like I learn a lot from both my teacher and also hearing other people sing. I mean, sorry, hearing other people play the piano. And you know, hearing all these recordings, Do you think that the same thing applies for opera too? Like, were you able to learn, you know, not only from Cynthia, but also from, you know, all the other people in her studio as well?
Oh, absolutely. Look, since I had no experience, I mean, I just heard a lot of opera. I was a sponge when it came to just seeing what the technique was, I mean, what I could understand of the technique. And, you know, the best opera singers don't show their technique. But I, from the lessons I was getting, I could see what I wasn't doing right.
Right.
So the studio classes were just incredible. I mean, I mean, she had the best students at the U of Illinois. Everyone wanted to work with Cynthia.
Right.
So it, and this was, and it wasn't any secret that she was by far the best teacher. I have no idea why she took me. She said, well, every once in a while, Philip, you know, you sing a note and I go, wow, oh, okay. But that's like one out of a million, you know? So I really have no idea why she took me.
Yeah, but that's amazing that you had that opportunity. Going back to science, how would you say, you know, how would you say that you see an intersection between music and science in your life? Or do you think that they play completely separate roles for you?
Well, the talents that are needed for science to do it at a high level at opera are somewhat similar. Mm-hmm. They both require incredible discipline. I mean, and the technical aspect of them, the technical things you have to master to be an opera singer. Very daunting. You know, you have to control the breath. You have to control, it has to be something natural that's coming out of you. It cannot seem forced. You look at the great opera singers, it's like they're just, singing is just an accident as they open their mouth. The best science seems almost like it's a natural thing. I mean, it's very unnatural. You look at what it takes to do amazing things. You look at someone like Einstein. I mean, the thing about Einstein is he could hold in his head two views which everyone else would view as contradictory. You know, everything has the same speed of, everything has the same, obeys the same laws of physics, but the speed of light is a constant for everyone. How is that possible? Because normally you subtract velocities when you're moving by a car. Well, your speed relative to the other car, you subtract them. Right. But everyone measures the same speed of light. He could hold in his head those things and make sense of it. So, you know, that is one talent that it takes. You know, and if you have that talent, you'll do amazing things. There are other things that you can have. But the thing underlying all of that is discipline. I'm not one of these people who sees, you know, poetry and great artistry necessarily in physics. I mean, I see that in opera, but I don't necessarily see that in physics. I see that, you know, what we do requires you to completely... Well, here's one thing. One thing they do say in opera, surrender to the aria. Okay? Leave nothing back. Okay? Okay, so, and there are problems in science, you know, physics, that you just have to completely commit to. You cannot do it halfway. And that's how you see, you know? I mean, you just, because it consumes you and takes you places you just didn't think about.
Yeah.
And so I would say, and you know this from when you get into a piece, you for example, pick, you know, the Rachmaninoff third concerto, right? You've played it.
Oh, I have not, but...
You know, those are pieces, you know, that if you play those, you have to be committed.
Exactly.
Because that is an experience you cannot take lightly. And you don't know how you're going to end up on the other side. So,
yeah. I totally agree, because definitely when I'm performing and when I hear other people perform, you know, the best pieces are always played by people who can just completely get into the mood, and they can, you know, understand the, you know, the emotions behind the piece, right. You know, and they can really just transform themselves kind of into the piece kind of. And so I totally understand what you're trying to say. And it's also funny that you mentioned Einstein, because Einstein was also a musician. And
oh, that's right. He played the violin. I forgot yes. about that.
Yes, he did. And there is a quote. There is a quote from him. And he says something like, I can't remember exactly what it said, but he says something like, you know, he could never imagine his life without music in it. And I think that is just so funny that, you know, he's this brilliant scientist who also is just, you know, so passionate about music. And that's kind of the same with you, because, you know, you're this great physicist, you're, you know, so accomplished, and you're also, you know, so passionate about opera, and you're able to perform in all these competitions, you know, national competitions, and, you know, take lessons with one of the best teachers at Illinois. So I think that's really incredible.
Thank you. Yeah, I forgot about Einstein. And, you know, maybe it is the fact that he was, yeah, I like to just take things the way they are rather than tell stories. But it is interesting. The thing I think that is true about Einstein, he was able to entertain in his head things that us mortals would view as a contradiction. And I think
right.
how he constructed special relativity is a classic example.
Right.
But he just was true to it. He said, that has to be true. And then right. he figured out what it meant. But there are right. few people who could do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And maybe, you know, because he was a musician, he could see that, you know, sometimes, as you well know, when you're looking at a piece and you know the period it's written in, you can predict what the next note's going to be. How are they going to complete the phrase?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And, you know, maybe he played enough pieces where he couldn't figure out what they were going to do next.
Right.
And maybe in that way of internalizing what pieces are about, and you can't always figure out how the musical sentences go together, you just have to accept that's what they did.
Yeah.
Like, there are lots of notes that Puccini wrote that, you know, I just wonder, you know, that was not necessary.
Yeah, but as you said, you have to surrender yourself to the aria.
You surrender yourself
exactly.
to the aria. You don't question Puccini. That's what he did.
Exactly. You okay. just do it.
Do it.
Exactly. So my last question for you before I ask you to maybe perform something is, if you had to choose, you know, if you had to make a Spotify playlist and you could only put 5 songs on there of any kind, any songs ever, you know, it could be songs, it could be classical music, anything, what would you choose?
Okay, so they'd probably all be opera arias.
Mm-hmm.
One would be Ella Jamai Mamo. It's from Don Carlos.
Mm-hmm.
You know the story of Don Carlos?
I do, I think.
You do? Okay. Tragic story.
Yes.
So King Filippo is sitting in his room. So for those of you who don't know the story of Don Carlo, I'll tell you the story. The opera opens with his son and his bride-to-be exchanging how much they love one another.
Mm-hmm.
But this exchange is interrupted. Someone comes and says, sorry, your bride has to be taken away. She is now committed to marry the king, your father.
Oh, yes.
Okay. And so the woman who he was supposed to be his bride is now going to be his uh-huh. stepmother.
Yes.
It's just gut-wrenching. Mm-hmm. But of course, you know, King Filippo, that's his name, realizes she doesn't love him. And so he sings this amazing aria, Ella Jamai Momo, she doesn't love me. You know, she never did.
Yeah.
And so that is an amazing aria. Okay. Mm-hmm. Dalla Su Apache is right up there. It's a tenor aria, you know. Then there's this aria that Violetta sings in La Traviata. I forgot the name of the aria because I don't quite remember soprano arias very well. Some of the Brandenburg concertos.
Mm-hmm.
Let me see. You know, I'm really just an opera nerd, you know. I mean, turns out. An aria from that famous aria in Madame Butterfly when she realizes that he isn't coming back.
Yeah.
I mean, I would say those would have to be on my list.
Yes. I would say all of those are pretty powerful choices. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The power of opera. I mean, it's just, a lot of people think, oh, the stories are kind of trivial, but you know, they're stories, and you know, what in life isn't a story, you know, especially when you've had kids, you know, you have to try to get them to do various things and you make up stories, get them to do things. And so, you know, opera is just another avenue for exploring how contorted human emotions can be. That's why I like it.
Yeah. All right. To end this off, maybe do you think you have a song that you could perform for us?
Do you want the whole thing? Because these arias tend to be long. Or do you just want to snip it?
Anything you're comfortable with. Whatever you want.
Okay. What language do you want?
Which language are you, you know, most comfortable to sing it in?
Well, we have to sing in all of them. So, you just pick one and I'll see what I can do.
All right. Maybe let's do Italian.
Okay. Italian. Okay. Okay, so I'll sing Il Lacerato Spirito by its Fiesco's aria in Simone Boccanegra. It's a bass aria. Of course, it's a bass aria. That's why I'm singing it. Okay, let me just get the first pitch.
All right.
Freddo sepolcro dell'angelo mio, ne a proteggerlo valsi. Rapito è lei, la Vergine corona. Oh, che dissi delito? Oh, mi perdona.
Do you want to hear more?
That was great. If you want to keep going, go ahead.
That's the recit. So I'll sing a little bit of the aria.
All right.
Okay. Spirito del mesto genitore. Era serbato a strazio di infamia e di dolore. Il serto lei d'embarco per me. Prega per me. Prega per me. Prega, Maria.
Amazing. I was able to feel your emotions through the screen, so that was great.
Well, thank you. So yeah, the setup for that is Fiesco is a nobleman. He has sequestered his daughter in a palace so that she wouldn't be affected by things in the world. Well, you know how that story ends. Mm-hmm. Simone Boccanegra breaks in, and they develop a relationship. She becomes pregnant. The opera opens with an introduction, and in which it's clear that his daughter Maria has died at the hands of Simone Boccanegra, but she's left a child. So Fiesco comes in and sings this gut-wrenching aria about, I'm leaving this palace for the last time. A te, l'estremo, addio, palagio altero. And he's cursing the palace and saying, I didn't protect my daughter.
Mm.
And that is what the aria is about.
Wow. That is powerful.
Yeah. That's a standard bass aria.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining the podcast, Philip. It was great having you. Okay. And, thank you so much for sharing your stories. And I really enjoyed listening to them.
Okay. Bye-bye.
All right. Thank you so much. Bye.